Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Colonel Stephanie Kice. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, I've made so many promotions.
This is your fourth appearance on the show.
So you
went from lieutenant to captain to major, and so you're now a colonel. So enjoy that.
I will. That's very cool. I'm actually really excited about that.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. And this is a particularly great episode to talk about. It's season 8, episode 3, Gorilla My Dreams, an incredibly silly title for a very serious episode. It originally aired on October 1st, 1979. It was written by Bob Caleri. I hope I'm saying that right. And directed by Alan Alda. So, of course, Stephanie, you've been on the show a bunch of times, so we can get right into the synopsis here.
Yeah.
Wounded arrive, and one of them is a young North Korean woman who is the prisoner of a South Korean official, Lieutenant Hung Lee Park. Hawkeye insists on treating her, despite Lieutenant Park wanting to take her away with him and his warning that she is an enemy gorilla. One of the other wounded is Margaret's old flame, Scully, and while Hawkeye, BJ, and Margaret tend to him, they catch Lieutenant Park trying to cart the young woman off. Hawkeye and BJ stop him, demanding she is their patient now. Park agrees, but he doesn't give the doctors much space. He parks himself right outside the OR, looking in on the surgery. In post-op, Hawkeye watches over the young woman and tries to give her some space, as Park demands to be able to ask her some questions. Park's mere presence causes the young woman to thrash angrily, cursing at him in Korean. Scully tells Hawkeye and BJ that he's heard of Park and that he has a reputation for getting information from his prisoners any way he can. That means torture, and Scully adds, to take your mind off the pain, he kills you. Lieutenant Park tries to go through Colonel Potter, who tries to buy them all some time by going through official channels and see if he can find a reason to not turn the prisoner over to Park. Later that night, in post-op, Scully distracts Margaret for a few moments. The young woman sees this and sneaks out of bed. She yanks out an IV tube out of the arm of a nearby patient, but collapses onto the floor, shattering the glass IV bottle. They discuss it in Potter's office, and Hawkeye and BJ think she was out of bed trying to escape from Lieutenant Park. Potter informs them that the word from G2 is bad. She must be turned over to Lieutenant Park, no questions asked. In the officers' club, Winchester and Park play chess. While the game is taking place, Klinger distracts Lieutenant Park's sentries by giving them some booze, Winchester's high-priced cognac, of course, giving Hawkeye the chance to sneak the young woman in a nearby ambulance. The guards notice as the ambulance drives off, and their yelling gets the attention of Lieutenant Park. Park storms out of the O Club, with BJ accidentally getting in the way, stops the ambulance, and officially takes the young woman prisoner. As Park grabs the young woman and drags her towards his Jeep, Hawkeye tries to stop him, grabbing her by the arm. She angrily pulls away and starts yelling at the doctors in Korean. With Park translating, she said that she would gladly kill any of you, just like she had tried to kill the young soldier in post-op. Despite this, Hawkeye and BJ still try and step in. This gets Park to arm guards to draw their weapons and point them at the doctors. There's a few moments of silence, and then Park gets into the Jeep, rifle in hand, and drives off. Hawkeye, BJ, Potter, and Klinger are left standing there in total silence, and they all walk off. Whew, Stephanie. Okay. Heavy episode. So I want to ask if you can remember, when did you first see this episode?
I saw it when it was on regular TV.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, because, of course, this episode is, quote unquote, famous in that Hawkeye says a dirty word. He calls Lieutenant Park a son of a bitch, which when I was a kid on television, that was never said. You could not say that. That's a curse word. And yet here's Hawkeye saying it. And so I didn't see this in first run. I saw it in reruns. But the rerun that when they aired it in my market, which I've talked about many times, Philadelphia, they left it in. They left that curse word in. And so was that what happened with you?
I mean, I remember watching this, and it was such an intense episode. And there were so many questions. As you said, it was aired in 1979, right?
Yep, October 1st, 1979.
So I was 8. And I didn't understand, like, why is Hawkeye trying to save her? But at the same time, why wouldn't Hawkeye try to save her?
Mm-hmm.
And he's so angry. But I remembered the episode where Trapper has the kid who contaminates the field, and
Yeah.
he goes
Yep.
in and he's going to take something out of the IV. And so
Yep.
all of this just, this episode has stuck with me my entire life because it's so, you just don't know what is the right, what's the right decision. And then Hawkeye says, son of a bitch. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, Hawkeye swore.
It's really startling, right? And
Yeah.
of course, I would imagine that in different markets, we've all gotten a lesson lately about how syndicators work and what shows can air and what markets and what can't. But there must have been some markets that said, we're not showing that. We're not, especially if, again, in, like they did in Philadelphia, they aired MASH at 7 p.m. and 7:30, which is
Oh.
definitely considered more of a family hour kind of thing. And so I would imagine there must be edits of this episode that have that line cut out, right? They must have
Yeah.
been some places that said we're not airing that on this thing. But it was always startling to me that, and it was a lesson early on about how television worked that I'm like, oh, well, I guess you can say stuff like that. You're not supposed to,
Right.
but you literally can because here's Hawkeye saying it. So okay, and of course, as you're
Yeah.
saying, it's a very heavy episode. It does have some laughs in it, but this is really a dramatic episode with just a couple of gags thrown in
Sure.
just to kind of balance it out a little bit. Again, mostly thanks to Scully, which, by the way, I have to think that that is maybe the fastest return appearance for a guest character in terms of number of episodes, because
Yeah.
of course this is season 8 and he first appeared in season 7, but he showed up in like the next to last episode of season 7 in the party, and this is the third episode of season 8. So there's only like five shows
Yeah.
between Scully guest appearances, which is very unusual for MASH. Usually they stretched it out a little, but it's like I guess
Sure.
they realized like, hey, he had a good rhythm with Loretta, that actor Joshua Bryant, who passed away relatively recently. Scully had a good rapport with Margaret, so why not bring him back in?
Yeah, and I really like Scully until I really didn't.
Yeah.
But his first few appearances, I'm just like very happy that Margaret's no longer with Donald, who clearly didn't respect her, and Frank, who clearly didn't respect her. And Scully seems at first to very much respect her, and they have such a good rapport with each other. But that comes to a screeching halt later on.
It sure does. Yeah. And it's a great mix because, of course, as Margaret said in previous episodes, I could never love someone who didn't outrank me. And here she is dating a guy who, as he says, in that later episode, they call him like xylophone because he goes up and down so much, his
Yeah.
ranks, you know? And
Yeah.
so, so
I mean, when she meets him, he's AWOL.
that's right. Yeah. I mean, right. Quite literally, the worst thing you can do as a soldier is go
Right.
AWOL, and Margaret's falling
Right.
in love with him. So it's really and again, the actor Loretta Swit and Joshua Bryant had a really great rhythm together. They just had natural chemistry. So, but that's for another episode. What happens to Scully? So this
Yeah.
episode, I mentioned it's written by Bob Caleri, who only had this one credit to MASH, which is unusual. He must have been one of the freelance writers. He had a lot of TV credits: Barney Miller, Benson, Night Court, Touched by an Angel, but nothing. Those are all fine shows, but this is a very distinctive episode, and it's kind of interesting that he just got this one and done. He never came back to the show, which is a shame because this is terrifically written. This is a really terrific episode.
Yeah, and there's so much subtlety and nuance to it that, you know, some MASH episodes are kind of heavy-handed. I think that comes a little bit later in the series, but it leaves a lot of room for interpretation and thought. So I'm surprised he didn't have more than this episode.
Yeah, I don't know. You never know the vagaries of how television works, but maybe he didn't want it. Maybe he was like, eh, I didn't enjoy this. Who knows? But I would think if you have one episode and I would think most people consider this as really pretty good, you'd be like, you would get invited back. But yeah, we'll never know. So anyway, the episode opens with Winchester coming clearly off of surgery, and he tries to take a nap, but Klinger interrupts him. And luckily for Winchester, it's because Klinger has done some backhand dealings and got him a bottle of very, very expensive cognac, which of course Winchester is very excited about. Now, I love when he's about to drink it, or he's looking at the label and it's Napoleon brandy, and he's talking to Klinger and he says, ah, Napoleon, If you, what he says, Napoleon, had you given more of this to Josephine, she might have stayed at home nights.
Yeah.
And he knows Klinger doesn't get that joke,
Right.
right? He knows, but he does it for his own entertainment because
Right.
he understands Klinger has no idea what the hell he's talking about.
I could relate to Charles in that moment because amusing myself is one of my favorite pastimes.
Yeah, I mean, right. He's doing just the gun again, just to entertain himself. I like it when he asks Klinger, "Where did you get it?" And Klinger goes, "Don't ask." And Winchester's like, "Like, so I love that he's willing to tolerate Klinger's underhandedness when it gets
Sure.
him something." And he even says, "You have the
Sure.
cunning of a mongoose." So, you know, when it works in Winchester's favor, he's all for it.
Right. Situational ethics 101.
Yeah, there you go. So he's playing with the cognac and he's like sniffing it, and Klinger's like, you know, basically chug it down. And of course, Winchester's like, wait, you don't do that with cognac. Have you
Right.
ever had cognac, by the way?
I have it's brandy, right? It's
Yeah.
just a thing to it. Yeah. We tried it when we were at an all-inclusive resort for our honeymoon. And even, I mean, because you can get whatever you want booze-wise. It doesn't cost anything. And it's not for me.
No, yeah, it didn't. I've had a little bit of it, did not do anything for me. So I was
Yeah,
like, okay, all right.
it's not for me.
Yeah. So Hawkeye and BJ, of course, enter, and they are expecting to get some of the brandy. And Winchester says, not a dram for either of you. And, you know, okay, whatever. And then they hear choppers arriving and ambulances, and they run outside. Now, there is nothing in that scene with Winchester. When he lays down, there is literally nothing to suggest that it is nighttime, but it
No.
feels like nighttime. It just
Right.
kind
He
of
puts
does.
his eye
And
mask on.
yeah, right. He puts his eye mask on like he's ready to go. Now, maybe he's been working all night and he's trying to, but it just feels like at night. And then when they cut to them out on the compound, it's clearly like, like in the morning. I was like, oh,
Right.
like, all right. But again, I'm just, it's, there's really nothing there to say it's daytime. It just feels like it's nighttime.
Like they've been working all day and then,
Yeah.
yeah.
So they go outside to the compound, and again, this one of the patients is this young woman who is clearly a civilian. And as Hawkeye is tending to her, that's when Lieutenant Park shows up. Now, Lieutenant Park is played by the wonderful character actor Mako, who'd been in a million things. Of course, he's been on MASH a bunch of times. This is by far the most, and even though he's, you know, he was in the season three episode Rainbow Bridge. Where he is a North Korean and he's, or no, I think he's a Chinese soldier
Yeah.
and he literally points guns at our heroes. And then there's the season nine episode, Best of Enemies. He points a gun at Hawkeye. This is his most threatening character, this
A
guy.
hundred percent. 100%. Because in Rainbow Bridge, it turns out that, he's just doing what he can. And then Frank brings out that,
The pea shooter of a gun. Yeah.
yes. And he's like, what
Yeah.
the hell is that? So yeah, he's very menacing in this episode.
He's got this very, and first of all, when he shows up, he's literally got two grenades hanging off of his uniform, which is like, that would make me nervous. I'm like, you've got two things that are just dangling off of your uniform that if they drop could blow us all up. So, but
Right.
okay. But
It's
yeah,
a very
there's,
interesting choice of
it
accessories.
really is. Yeah. But there's just something about the way Mako played, well, not something, is he's a great actor, but the way he plays it, and that it's just the way he speaks. He's just, he has, right from the beginning, all his scenes with Hawkeye, he's exasperated, right? He's just exasperated with Hawkeye because he's just sort of like, I don't get this. What are you doing? You know, this woman is a, he says, an enemy gorilla. And Hawkeye even has a line about, I'll frisk her for bananas, you know, yet I'm bum
Right.
bum bum. But there's something about the way he's just barking at Hawkeye, these very
Yeah.
direct statements, and he's good. There's no, he's got very formal language, and
Yeah.
there's just something about that, again, that makes him just incredibly menacing. So it's just terrific, terrific performance by him in this episode.
I don't think that Mako ever did anything but a spectacular performance in anything he did.
Yeah.
He's just a remarkable actor.
Yeah. Every time he shows up in a movie, I've watched some old movie and I'll see him show up. I'm always like, oh, okay. All right. Mako's in
Yeah.
this. This is great. Okay. So meanwhile, we see Scully arrive and he's been wounded. And of course, Margaret is really upset about that. And Hawkeye, and he's got like a hole in his stomach, and Hawkeye and BJ tend to him a little bit. And then they notice They look over and they see that Park and his two MPs are carrying the young woman away without running it by him. And of course they, they're like, they say, find somebody else to bother. Her dance card is full. And Hawkeye's like, you're very pushy. And again, we can see that where this is all heading. And then young woman, they never give her a name. I'm going to keep calling her the young woman, the gorilla woman, for lack of a better term, but they never give her a name. She's saying something to Mako and spitting at him. And again, I love that that's not subtitled. I love that we
Right,
don't get
we
to hear
don't
that.
know what she's saying. Because she could be like, why are you accusing me of this? I haven't done anything. We just don't know what she's saying, which adds to the layers of complexity about how she is to be treated.
The woman, by the way, the actress's name is Haonani Min. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. She has got a ton of credit. She's still working to this day. She's done movies, she's done television, she's done voice acting. She was in Steve Martin's The Man with Two Brains. She did she did I love that movie. She
I do
did
too.
voice work on Disney's Mulan. She did a voice on Superman the Animated Series. She did Lilo and Stitch, The Tick, and then she made appearances on Tour of Duty and China Beach. So she really ran the gamut of all this kind of the war film, war shows on MASH and then going from Tour of Duty to China Beach. So we then go into, after a brief scene in surgery, we then go into post-op with Scully and Margaret catching up, and she's very delighted to have him around. She's all smiley. It's nice to see that side of Margaret. Hawkeye comes in to talk to the young woman, and he's trying to make small talk with her, and of course she doesn't understand what he's saying, and she and vice versa. And then Park shows up and he demands that he wants to question her, and he's like, she's awake. I just want to ask her. I love the way he says, I wish to ask but a few simple questions. Where is the harm? I love the way he's kind of barking these things at Hawkeye. It's just really terrifically threatening.
It really is because you don't realize how much power is in the formality of his language choices versus being ca more casual. It brings like gravitas to the whole situation, the way he's speaking.
So the woman, of course, gets very upset, and Hawkeye tells Margaret, I want to keep an eye on this guy. If any of the if anybody of his the two guards step in here, I want to hear about it. So then they talk to Scully, and Scully gives them the lowdown about this guy, and he says, like I mentioned in the synopsis, he says if he gets a hold of her, he won't let up until he gets what he wants. And they're like, you mean torture? And he says, torture to start, take your mind off the pain, then he kills you. And BJ throws a look to Hawkeye, and Hawkeye says, not this time, not with my patient. And this is one of the things I think a theme that's run through the series with Hawkeye is that he's objecting to this on a moral ground, of course, but also because it's his patient. Like, there's an offense that he's taking that it's his patient. It's like almost like his ego is involved in this. It now has become just sort of, I don't know, not that he wants to win just for the sake of winning, but there's something about this that he's like, no, you're not doing this to my patient.
And he said at one point in time that like she has some of his best handiwork or knitting or something in there, but there is very much I don't want to say ownership interest, but he becomes very territorial about people that
That's the
he
better
can't.
word for it, territorial. That's a much better word for it. Right, that's exactly what that happened in like season one, like the Sticky Wicket episode where Henry chastised him for saying, "Are you mad that it's not going great? Are you mad because it's your patient? Like it's ruining your record, that kind of thing." And that's been a kind of a slightly repeating element to the character over the course of all these seasons. So we then follow. We're then up on the compound with Hawkeye and BJ finally talking to Colonel Potter. You're wondering, when is Colonel Potter going to finally get folded into this episode? And they have this long talk with him, and Potter tries to explain to them both. He says, you boys may be in over your heads here. And he's kind of giving them the skinny of like, look, I understand this is important to you, but we are in a war. And this woman, first of all, he says, has it occurred to you that this lady might very well be who Park says she is? And they kind of just sort of dismiss that. And it took me a bunch of times to notice this, because again, this is something we've mentioned on previous episodes where Most TV is not a director's medium. You don't get a chance to do a lot of flourishes, and this one is directed by Alan Alda, where we follow Hawkeye, BJ, Colonel Potter, and then Winchester, and then Colonel Lieutenant Park joins in the fray, and it is all one shot, going from Potter's tent all the way across the compound as they discuss this. And Park says something like, "This woman is our enemy, and she is dangerous." And they're sort of dismissing that. And he says, and then of course Park tries to ignore Hawkeye and BJ and sort of go right to Potter and saying, "Hey, look, we're both commanding officers here. What are we doing? Why are you kind of letting this go on?" But this shot that goes on keeps going and pulling back across the co as our characters walk across the compound, and then we see that they are walking to the mess tent. And before we even get to that, by the way, Park refers to this all as a game, and he says the loss of a single pawn is insignificant. All that matters is winning the game. And if there is a worse thing to say to Hawkeye, it's that, right? It's to dehumanize her. So that you, and he doesn't know that, but he has to know that there's you, any chance of Hawkeye giving you any inch is gone by referring to someone in such cold terms.
It's a, and then, I mean, Hawkeye, while it doesn't visibly happen, as a loyal viewer, you know that, like, this is, he's never going to give up on this now. He's dug his heels in forever.
And of course, that mention of chess gets Winchester involved, and he says, "I understand you play," and Park's like, "Well, worthy opponents are scarce here," and he says, "I fancy myself an accomplished player. Might you want to play together?" And of course, Hawkeye and BJ are offended at this, and the shot continues. This is all one unbroken shot until we see that the camera is inside the mess tent. It's inside now, and then we literally see them come and open the door. We see the frame of the mess tent door. On the left-hand part of the frame, Winchester walks up to the door, opens it, and the camera comes in. So the camera has tracked from the outside of the compound into the mess tent. They must have taken one of the doors off, tracked back. And then we find ourselves inside. And it's like, unless you're paying attention to it, it's a pretty subtle shot. But once you notice, you're like, wow, that was pretty cool. Good for you, Alan Alda. Like, you tracked this whole thing and had this like 5 minute scene with all the actors doing this together. And now we're inside. I think it's terrific.
I never realized how constricting television is for directors until, it got brought up on this podcast and how TV is not really a director's medium. So anytime there's a shot like this, or there's that one episode early on where they shoot it from above and Radar's upset about getting his Dear John record or whatever. So whenever there's something like that that comes up, it is very noticeable.
It's a nice little flourish, right? To be able to kind of think that through and say, oh, I mean, you could just break it up into a bunch of close-ups, but instead they kind of make it this whole nice, whole long conversation with multiple actors coming in and out of the frame. I think it's really, and again, it's great to be like, wow, wait a minute, we're inside. How are we inside before? We were outside before. I think it's great. And also, something I have literally never noticed until I watched it again for the purposes of this episode. As they're entering the tent, you hear Hawkeye mutter, "Colonel, come on." And you hear Potter, and Potter goes, okay. I've never noticed that before. I've literally never heard, because it's slightly off mic. And I love that. I love that kind of annoyed, "Colonel, come on. Like, what are we doing here?"
Colonel Connor's like,
Okay. So then he goes and he asks Klinger basically to call I-Corps and say, "Look, let's figure out what we're going to do with this potential prisoner." And he turns to Hawkeye and BJ and says, "Basically, that's all I can do." And then that's our act break. And so again, we've got the stakes here. We come back from commercial and we get our are seen with radar, which is just sort of filling in the contractual obligation, I guess, Gary Berghoff had to be in the show until they get rid of him. All of these are singles. I wonder, all these scenes of him in his hotel, and then in this scene where he's clearly in like a restaurant, I wonder if these were built for MASH or if they had these as like standing sets on the 20th Century Fox lot for other purposes, and they just recorded them that way. It seems like a lot of work to
I
dress
can't
all these people
imagine.
just for this like 30 second scene.
Right, that they would build that from scratch for this.
Yeah, I have to think they might have, at the very least they had some stuff they could put together. And Klinger, I'm sorry, Klinger is kind of like, Radar, you got to help me out. And Radar is, again, this whole season he's very pissy because he's always on
Yeah.
R&R, and he does like, leave me alone, I don't want to be bothered, which it seems kind of like not Radar-y to do.
Yeah. I don't
No.
think that they handled this whole him leaving well. He just comes off as angry and petulant and snotty, and it's so different when he gets back. And spoiler alert, when his uncle dies, and he's like not going to go home because his place is there. Well, then you certainly wouldn't have acted like that whenever they contacted you. You know, it's just kind of all over the place and doesn't, it just doesn't, it's not cohesive, and it just makes him leave on a less than spectacular note.
It's again, like as everyone knows, he was originally supposed to leave at the end of season 7, and then apparently the network or 20th Century Fox stepped in and said, can we move it to later on in the season? So to make it more of a like a sweeps event. And so they had to jerry-rig this thing of Gary Berghoff just kind of talking on the phone. And it never sits right, right? As you're saying, it's like Radar would be Radar. I know they can't write it that way, but Radar would be doing whatever he could to help Klinger out because he knows he's helping out Colonel Potter. He wouldn't be telling Klinger, basically, leave me alone. It's very un-Radar-like behavior. So yeah. He at first we think he's at maybe like a he's putting off like he's putting across the Klinger like he's at like a massage parlor or something, and he's like, that was Susie Klinger, she's wearing a slinky blue dress, and then we see that she's basically like the hostess of a restaurant. That's all that it is. There's nothing other nefarious going on. By the way, Susie, this the woman who's Susie, who gets a couple of lines, is uncredited for whatever reason. I could not find the name of the actress who portray Susie, which seems unfair. I would think if you get a line, you should be able to be credited.
Sure.
But okay.
But before we move on, the best part of that whole scene is when he says, "It's a slinky blue dress like you wear too."
That's
And
right.
I was just like, "Oh, that's
Yeah.
lovely."
Everyone's just incorporated that, right? Like they're appreciating Klinger and that blue outfit that you wear. It's great. So then we are back in post-op, and Scully is temporarily distracting Margaret. First, he pretends there's something wrong with him, and she comes over to see him, and then he's like basically saying, no, I just want to, I've been saving my energy. He says, I want to spend it a little right now. And he throws his curtain over his bed so nobody else, so she can't see anything, nobody can see them. And she's trying to be professional and trying to hold him off, but it's not going fast enough. And then we see the young woman notice this. She pulls the IV out of her arm and struggles over to the bed of another patient, tries to she pulls his IV out of his leg, and then she loses her balance, grabs the bottle of the IV stand and falls over, and you hear it smash. And of course, Margaret is absolutely distraught because she let this happen. And then we cut to them in Potter's office, and Colonel Potter is sort of like, oh, all right, it's no big deal. And she's beside herself. Now, if another nurse had done this, they would be in a lot of trouble. And Margaret's kind of going a little easy on herself.
Yeah, Margaret would be like have a full speed come apart if somebody else did
She would be shipping them out of the unit, right? At that
Yes.
point, she'd be like, you're not fit enough to be here. Like, okay, all right, Margaret. So anyway, they continue to argue this, and Potter says, look, G2 has made a decision. There is nothing we can do. And they're both Hawkeye and BJ are being a little rude to Potter. They're making jokes about the sort of the formality of it. And Potter is just saying, look, there's nothing to do here. As soon as she's well enough, we have to turn her over to Lieutenant Park. It's like, that's the end of it until she heals up. So we then see Hawkeye and BJ trying to help her walk, help her get her balance. And they're really proud of her because she's making progress. But there's a moment where they try and hold her arm to keep her up, and she pulls it angrily, pulls it away. And they're clearly not picking up that she does not like them.
Right. I mean, I didn't catch this, I think, when I was a kid because, I was a kid. But watching it now, there may be some questions at the beginning, but when she gets up and she pulls the IV out of the other soldier, and then the way she's acting with Hawkeye and BJ, it's clear that she is what Colonel Park says she is. And Hawkeye just seems completely oblivious to this.
Yeah, well, because nobody was there to see her do it, they think it was by mistake. They think it was that
Right.
she leaned on the thing and accidentally pulled it out, not knowing that she did it on purpose. So that's a great reveal, is that the audience now is now ahead of our characters, because we know, as you say, she is exactly what Lieutenant Park says she is.
Lieutenant, I'm sorry.
But yeah,
I
sorry.
gave him a
You gave him a
promotion.
promotion. I think that's a great turn, that we now know, no, they're wrong about this. They're
Yeah.
wrong about this. So then we find Winchester and Park playing chess in the O Club. I love the way Alda shoots the chess game, where he puts
Yes.
the camera way down low to the point where the chess pieces are kind of in the fuzzily in the foreground, kind of looming up. And as both David Ogden Stiers and Mako lean into the frame and move the piece and whatever. And we see that Winchester is not above playing sort of dirty, in
Right.
that he is, makes a bunch of loud noises as Park is trying to think of a move. He rattles his fingers on the tire table to distract Park. He moves his chair back and forth as it's creaking. And, we see that he's not. I don't know. I mean, it's like, is this, I guess that's an acceptable part of the game. Even Park sort of says, no, the Winchester Gambit, as he calls it. And he even
Yeah.
says, I think he says, don't apologize. It is part of the game. So I kind of like that Park sees through all this, and he's just kind
Yeah.
of like, eh, it's all right. It's I this is your style.
Right.
It's not gonna stop me, because of course he takes Winchester's queen right after that.
Right. It's almost, and I think that Charles is so intentional in trying to distract him that he loses his space on the board, and he and Mako ends up winning because Charles is more focused on his ulterior motives than he is on the actual game itself.
Well, that lines up perfectly with what I wanted to ask you. Do you think they never reveal it? Do you think that Winchester is in on this plan?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay. You think so?
I
You think they
think.
figured that once he revealed he wanted to play the game with Park, they went to him and said, okay, let's set up the game. And while you're doing that, we're going to sneak this woman out.
Yes.
Okay.
And even I think that even if it wasn't so explicitly stated, I think that our characters at this point in time know each other well enough and understand each other's motivations that it would sort of have wouldn't have even had to have been spoken that Charles would know what was going on, that it his job to keep him occupied or
Okay.
somehow keep him occupied.
Right. Okay. And maybe that's why he was trying to extend the game to let it go
Right.
further. And of course, it doesn't work, because it Park even says, I'm sure you want to think about your move before you take my queen. Like, he's
Right.
like, okay. So, yeah, he's not defeating. He's trying anything he can to slow Park down, but obviously it's not working. So, meanwhile, we see Klinger working to distract Park's guards. They are played by two actors here. I couldn't tell which one was which, because they are just identified on IMDb as like Korean soldiers. But one of them is George Chung. He has over 200 credits, which is
Wow.
fantastic, right? Isn't that amazing, right? That's, he just never stops working. He just a few of his credits: Seinfeld, House, L.A. Law, China Beach again, T.J. Hooker. He's in Mars Attacks. I love that movie. Rush Hour, The Killer Elite, which is a terrific 70s movie with James Caan. I mean, it's like all over the place. So this guy just always working, Oh, he's working, George Chung. Good for you, buddy. And then the
Yeah.
other one is a guy named Marcus Mukai, who has much less credits. He was in stuff like Airplane 2, The Abyss, Soap, LA Law, and Dynasty. So, okay, they've both done all right for themselves.
Yeah. 200 credits, though. That's,
Isn't that nuts?
yeah.
200 credits. Like, that's a lot. And I mention this anytime when we talk about IMDb. When IMDb lists a credit, if you are on like five episodes of LA Law, it only lists that as one credit.
Right.
So, like, that might even be more than 200. It's
Yeah.
200 unique credits. So,
Yeah.
if you come back and play multiple parts, you can have hundreds and hundreds of credits. So, I don't know which guy is George Chung, but good for you, buddy, because
Yeah.
you are constantly working.
Yeah.
So Klinger's trying to distract them, and he brings them booze, which of course he's bringing the cognac that he got for Winchester, and he refers to himself as a dog face. And of course they're like, do you know what the one Korean soldier, do you know what he's talking about? Yeah, he's upset. He's got the face of a dog
And the nose of a
and the
duck.
nose of a duck. Yeah. And then Klinger says, and he points to his own nose, and he's like, it gave it its own army serial numbers.
Right. So that's another point that maybe that they did actually have a conversation, because I can't imagine Klinger just going in and taking that cognac, knowing after the like witnessing the production number that Charles went through when he gave it to him. I think that maybe Charles had offered this up to help facilitate this plan.
Oh, see, now I don't think I've ever really thought of it that way, but that makes a lot of sense, right? That would be quite a sacrifice for
Right.
Winchester to make, considering he's pretty apolitical, right? But even he, I guess, is probably like, well, I don't want this
He
woman to get
is.
murdered, for God's sakes.
He is. And even despite some of the kind of unpleasant things he said about Italians when his sister was going to
We have
get
that episode
married,
to look forward to later on the season.
but he has an sort of a pervasive current. Undercurrent of fairness, like when the tooth cell is it called the tooth cell sh the tooth shall set us free, the one
Oh,
where he,
yeah.
yeah. So I mean, he's kind of one of those guys that I think that he has a deep respect for what's right. He may not always catch it. But when he's able to stop an injustice or what he thinks is an injustice, he will.
Yeah, he's got right. His line is different than Hawkeye and BJ's, but he does have one. And he is still a doctor. He doesn't want anyone to die, you know. So they as they're as Klinger is talking to the two guards, we see that Hawkeye is slowly trying to get this woman loaded into the ambulance, and we even see the ambulance driver, and he's making this silent motion of like, okay, load her in. And then what trips them up is they hear the roar of the engine, and they hear the doors to the ambulance slam shut. And that's when they take off. And then we cut to the inside of the O Club, and we hear Park juts up from the table to try and stop it. And then BJ gets in his way and pretends he can't open the door. And he does all that. And Park even says, get out of my way. And they move him out. Now, we're not going to criticize this too specifically because it's the episode. It's 24 minutes. It's got to end. But they didn't really think this plan through, right?
No.
They really should have looked at the compound and decided, well, wait,
Right.
maybe we should walk her further out of the compound so by the time the ambulance is moving,
It
Park
doesn't
can't jump in
stack
front
up.
of it.
Right.
But okay, that's fine. I don't
Sure.
think the ambulance has ever had to cross in front of the O Club before, but now it does. But
I
okay, it's
don't think
fine.
so
Yeah.
either.
There is a nice little bit of, again, camera work by Alan Alda, where the camera is inside the ambulance and it's over the shoulder of the driver, and
Yeah,
we
I really like
see
that.
Mako and BJ and or excuse me, Lieutenant Park, BJ and Winchester coming out of the O Club, and we sort of see them through the windshield, which is good. It's just a nice little
I
piece of,
really like
yeah.
that particular camera work there.
Yeah, gives it some verisimilitude, kind of, you know, it's like almost like handheld kind of thing. Lieutenant Park stops the ambulance and he says, well, now, you know, you've clearly demonstrated that this woman is well enough to travel. And he says, you've also demonstrated with equal clarity that you can no longer be trusted. And which, I mean, you know, he's right about that. And then Potter comes out and screaming, what the hell's going on? And Mako says, your doctors tried to spirit this patient away, which I was looking it up on some of the details of this episode. Like, that is a huge offense in army protocol. Like, that is court-martial, go to jail for life kind of thing. It's like Colonel Potter really manages to head off a lot of this stuff that Hawkeye and BJ pull.
Yeah, because Hawkeye and PJ would have been my neighbors to the northwest in Leavenworth had they actually done this.
Oh, is that real? Are you is that is Leaven you that's is that nearby?
I can drive to Leavenworth in like 45 minutes from my home.
Wow. Oh boy. Okay. Jeez. You know, this is huge. So anyway, he grabs them and then Hawkeye tries to grab her. She turns around and starts yelling at Hawkeye in Korean. And Lieutenant Park says, she says you're a fool and she curses you. And Hawkeye goes, oh, she does, huh? And then I love Mako's read on when he grabs the back of her neck and shakes her head. And he's like, I'm not lying, Captain. Look at her face. And you can tell that, yeah, she's clearly not saying anything friendly by the way she's looking at them and the way that she's spitting at them. And again, I love that it's not subtitled. I love that we have to just go with what her read is with her face and her gestures. I
But
think
it
that's
is
a
abundantly clear that she is spitting venom at them. She hates them for what they've done to her country and to the people of Korea, North Korea, South Korea, whatever, the Korean people. It's very impressive that she's able to convey that so clearly without us knowing what she's saying.
Yeah. And I love that Lieutenant Park translates. He's like, he says, just as I would gladly kill this murderer, which is, of course, he's referring to himself. He says, I would kill one of you just as I tried to kill my enemy in your hospital. And there it is, right? And we get this one brief moment of Hawkeye and Potter and BJ all looking at each other, kind of dumbfounded. And, you know, this, I don't want to spend too much time on this because whatever, but you know, this series gets a bad rap from people who want to give it a bad rap about that it's all, you know, liberal bromides and it's all, you know, all this kind of stuff and it's very one-sided. And of course it is. MASH had a point of view from the very beginning and it'd be hard. I don't know what show you're watching if you think that it doesn't have that. But this is one of the episodes that reverses that. Because the show is, as we talked about earlier, the show is clearly showing us they're wrong. They're wrong on this one. They think that she is not who she thinks who she is, and she is. Now, of course, you can say, well, Park's a monster because he's going to literally take her out and put a bullet in her skull. But this is one of the ones that is showing you, no, our heroes are wrong. They got this one wrong. And I think that's a pretty brave thing to tack to take for a show, for any show, especially a show in its eighth season.
And not only are they wrong, but they're this error could cost American lives. Because let's say she goes to the other hospital, she gets out, whatever, and she's able to continue her activities, and American soldiers die because of it. So that's it's so complex because there's no right answer to any of it, and it. I think that this episode, probably more than any other episode, stuck with me because it really explains war. Like there's no good way out. There's no good choices. They're all sort of like the less shitty choice of all your choices.
It's terrific. I'd say I always think this is one of those episodes that people that want to criticize the show from that point of view, they just either they forget about it or whatever, or they, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the reasons are, but it's like this is one of the ones that is showing you, yeah, no, are these guys are got this totally wrong. They got this totally wrong. And I love Hawkeye says, "You can't wait to get at her, can you? Can you?" And then Park has this wonderful line where he says, "Can you not see that this woman's life is more important to you than it is to her?" And like, I love the way he's kind of like he's dumbfounded,
Yeah,
right?
he's
Like he's just, I
completely
cannot
incredible.
understand this.
Right.
And then he says, "I will go now." And BJ says, "You don't want to be late for your killing." And then Park says, "You have done your job. Now I will do mine." And that's when Hawkeye lets loose, "You son of a bitch," which again, at when I was a kid, that was a whoa.
Right.
Wow. He didn't talk like this on other TV shows. And I, I'd love to know the I always find this stuff fascinating. I would love to know, like, how did this get through? Like how did they talk to the censor and they make a special case? I mean, I know that, these TV networks have rules about what you can say, but those things can be relaxed in context and in different, things like that. I mean, there's been stuff shown on television that normally can't be shown, but they decide they give it a different context. But I would love to know, like, well, how did this go up the chain? And did MASH, at this point, MASH was such a popular show, probably had a little more leeway to get away
Sure.
with this stuff. There's the famous story from season one where they wanted to say that Radar was a virgin, and they literally wouldn't let him say it. They were like, "No, you can't say the word virgin." Like, that's how ridiculous that was. Here by season eight, we've got Hawkeye saying this. So that's it's a great moment. And then they lunge forward, the two soldiers pull out their guns and cock them,
Yeah.
and we get a series of ones of everybody except Klinger, which bothers me. Because Jamie Farr deserves it. He's in on the scene. I'd like to see his reaction to this too.
Yeah, he's out there with the dudes with guns.
If those guys start firing, he's getting hit, right? He's
Exactly.
part of this. So then they kind of everyone sort of stands down. The one gunman gets back in the Jeep and gets into the driver's seat, and he hands Lieutenant Park the rifle. And Mako has this great bit of business where he sort of cocks the rifle on his thigh. And that's, I mean, he's obviously a terrible, he's a monster. He's about to go commit a murder. But this is this moment where he's kind of like, yeah, I got this one on you. Because he has this incredibly cocky look on his face.
Yeah, he does.
So,
It's go ahead.
oh yeah, no, I'm saying they drive away and I have to wonder, did Bob Collery or any of the other writers try and think of a line and, to end the scene on? Because there is no, what line are you going to say? And so they just have our
Yeah.
four characters stare at each other and then they all just walk off in different directions silently. And again, it's a ballsy way to end the main act of your episode.
Yeah, but it's also, I think any line that they could have tried to put in there would have greatly diminished the power of what we just watched.
Yeah, right. And exactly. It's like what are we going to put a button on this? So just
Right.
they're all just sort of staring off because, as you say, it's like there was no good option here. This is just the least shitty option.
Yeah.
And so they our heroes got handed a defeat in this one. Absolutely. And that's the
But
end of
did
the
they?
well, from their point of view, they did.
Right.
I mean, from their point of view, they wanted to. I mean, it's interesting. They don't. I mean, we can't. I never want to criticize a show too much when it's trying to do too much in 23 and a half minutes or whatever it is. It would have been interesting to see what their reactions would have been with this new information, right?
Right.
Because now
Right.
they know something they didn't know before. Would they feel the same way? Probably,
Yeah, I know Hawkeye would.
Hawkeye would have. Certainly,
Like I.
BJ.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's again terrific, great way to end the show. So then we have to lighten things up a little bit, and we come back from commercial, and Margaret is saying bye to Scully, and he is, very warm, and she's trying to, She's very warm and very open with him, and then Hawkeye and BJ show up and stand near her, and she's all of a sudden kind of a little more official, and the you know,
Right.
oh
They
no,
little mother her with her boyfriend.
yeah, exactly, you know, and he was great. She's like, oh yes, okay, and it ends with a slightly dirty joke, which we'll end the episode on, by the way, which I think is kind of a fun gag. So it's a nice warm way to get out of a pretty heavy episode. So that's Gorilla My Dreams.
It's one of the things I think that was most interesting about it for me was that it was a woman that was doing this. And we don't see women traditionally at this period in time. We don't see them as involving themselves in this conflict. But she did, and clearly was, and I'm going to say this, and it's not going to sound like what I mean it to, but she was clearly quite good at what she was doing.
She's a gorilla, and she's actually pretty good at it. And again, she, you know, did almost manage to kill a guy in a hospital. Like she is, even though she's wounded, she is alert enough to know that in the 5 seconds that Margaret's distracted, that's the time to make her move. So she's got her eyes on the prize.
Right, she can take somebody out and she's going to take that chance or take that opportunity. So, and it also kind of deals with the, and I'm making bunny ear air quotes, the ethics of war. And, is it ethical to save someone so then you can torture them and eventually kill them? It raises all kinds of questions. So you say we don't want to, they, do too much in a 24-minute episode. They did as much in 24 minutes as was humanly possible with this one.
It's a heavy issue, and it's the kind of episode I think that people think about when they say the later seasons got more, it became more of a comedy drama than a comedy show, because this is, again, other than the Scully stuff, there's very few laughs on purpose in the whole episode. And in fact, you know, that kind of leads into my favorite line, and I will actually go first on this one because it plays up to it, is that when BJ is watching Winchester and Park play chess, Park asks BJ about the prisoner, and BJ tries to kind of dismiss him. And then he finally says, besides, what's your hurry? You haven't finished torturing Winchester yet, which is a grim joke. Like, it's not really funny. But that's a, like, to just sort of call out, yeah, you're somebody that tortures people. Like, whew.
And so he's so flip with it.
Yeah.
We all know who we are here, so let's not even pretend.
Yeah. I like that no one laughs at it, right? Because it's the O Club is empty. It just hangs in the air. I think that's just a terrific line. So do you have a favorite? Again, hard to find a favorite joke from this episode. There's like about four jokes in the whole thing, but do you have a favorite one?
I think the part where Klinger's like, come on, like chug it, with the cognac.
Oh, snort. Have a, yeah, snort. Have a snort. He's like,
Snort, yeah. And it's just like, oh, Klinger.
one does not snort
Right.
cognac, Klinger.
And he
So,
doesn't want to put the cognac in anything that would like bruise it. I'm like,
right.
sir, it's liquid.
Make sure you don't. And then he like flicks the glass, damage the crystal, and he had a little ding sound to it. So he's trying so hard to, you know, maintain some civility in class here in Weizhongbu. So, well, again, that is Gorilla My Dreams. Again, one of the silliest titles for such a dark episode. Gutsy to do it so early on in the season. Again, like, you're not Lee. I mean, but the season eight was all full of kind of heavy shows later on, as we'll get to them. So, Stephanie, once again, thank you for coming back and being on the show. It's always fun to have you on.
Thank you so much, Rob. I really appreciate it. And before we leave, I did want to mention that this is the first time I've talked to you since Loretta Swit passed away.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you had some interaction with her, and I wanted to extend my condolences because I know that those interactions with her were very, very meaningful. So I am sorry.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you know, yes, I was very fortunate. I got to meet her twice and have her on the show. And it's just, you
And you
know,
bought her French fries.
I bought her French fries. Yeah, as I've told that story many, many times. Yeah, the photo I have of me and her is like one of my most cherished items. And yeah, it's there's a convention at the time of this recording. By the time everybody hears this, it will have passed. But there's a convention coming up that she was scheduled to be at, along with Jamie Farr and Jeff Maxwell. And now she obviously is not going to be there. And it's just like, as the ranks of the people that were made the show are ever diminishing, it always just is a little sad. And so, it's going to be great to watch the episodes over again and just marvel at how great she was and how she carried every storyline that could involve a woman's issue on her back, because she was the only woman on the show for 11 straight seasons, and that was a huge load. So, but
Yeah, I
yeah.
mean, when any of them pass, it's obviously, a sad occasion, but this one seems just a little bit heavier.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, again, Stephanie, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find me over on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. You can find all the back episodes of this show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. And if you want to support the network, please go to patreon.com/FWpodcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P, Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Schulman, and Mike Thomas. I very much appreciate the support from MaxCast, everybody. So that is good to do it. Thanks so much for listening. We will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
You doctors did a terrific job on him.
All part of the service, Margaret.
Yeah, all we did was make sure he was ready for action. It's too bad he had to leave before he saw any.